I'm at the Byron Bay Writers Festival and I'm talking to Paul West from the River Cottage. Hello there, Paul, and welcome to Arts Canvas.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
So the River Cottage has been going from strength to strength. So what's the sort of plans for keeping the whole idea going?
So we're about to go into production for our fourth season. The third's not long been on air and it was successful, fortunately, hence going again. So it's just one of those things. It's an ever-sprawling, evolving beast and I'm just riding it to who knows, to the horizon.
How much do you think that all these sorts of shows are actually transforming the way that people view food in this country?
I wouldn't say that it's the sole thing and it's, you know, groundbreaking or really shattering people's preconceptions. But in my experience, it's definitely being used as a tool, particularly amongst families, for engaging children about where their food comes from. So, because if you live in an urban area, like the majority of the viewers of the program, and you have kids and you care about where your food comes from, how do you illustrate where meat comes from, other than saying, you know, beef comes from a cow, chicken comes from a chicken, pork comes from a pig. So by sitting down watching the program as a family, they can engage children and further their understanding about how their meat is actually reared.
Do you think that the increasing trend towards people taking over sort of little garden plots or even sometimes even nature strips and putting chicken sheds in the backyard is going to become an even bigger trend than it is now?
I'd like to think it's not so much as a trend as more as a reaction of human survival. The further our food gets industrialized, the less nutritious it becomes for us, and it also, you know, food's one of those things that has far-reaching impacts beyond our hip pocket and beyond actually what we put in our mouth. And I don't know that anyone's actually studied it, but in my experience, once I've engaged where my food comes from, I reap all these other kind of ancillary benefits, like a stronger place in a community, more happiness, and all these wonderful kind of side effects from simply caring about where my food comes from. So, yeah, I'd like to think that that it really, it's going to become more and more significant because our population's ever increasing and our agricultural land is constantly shrinking. So people are going to have to become more and more resourceful about where their food's coming from. And I think urban agriculture and backyard gardening and farming is really a wonderful response to that.
It's also part of this thing of taking food back to being a shared celebration, which I think we might have moved away from, don't you?
I couldn't agree more. Unfortunately, it seems like food is just this thing now where it's just a service to the body. It's not something that's celebrated or enjoyed or shared. It's just inputs and outputs, which is an incredible devaluing of something that really can have a wonderful effect on yourself and your family and your communities. I mean, in my experience, there's a few greater pleasures than sitting down to a good meal with good friends and having conversation or indeed your own family. It's one of those things that people say they don't have time for, which I can totally appreciate and relate to, having been a chef that works 90-hour weeks. But on the same hand, I think that moment of stillness and that wonderful conversation and the connection that you have with sharing a table and sharing a meal is something that's almost fundamental to the human condition.
Do you think it would help also if we start educating children at an early age on the preparation of food as well as the origins of foods and things like it? Would it help if we put it into the school curriculum?
Definitely. It's a survival skill. It's an essential part of being human. It's part of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, we need food and shelter. And if you can't feed yourself, then you really, there's something going wrong. And if the wheels fall off your life and all of a sudden you lose a great deal of disposable income and you can't afford to eat out or you can't afford to eat processed food, then how do you eat? And I know I didn't grow up in a culinary family. I learned to cook, one, as a chef through my trade, and two, as a poor young adult living on a very low income, that I had to figure out ways of being resourceful. And that's all cookery is based in some way on a peasant culture of the most poorest, marginalised members of our society cooking things to get nutrient for survival.
Yes, well, of course, it's interesting that you mentioned the whole fact about peasant culture and peasant cuisine, because all the great cuisines are actually peasant cuisines,
exactly,
as we know.
Yeah.
But where do we then place the whole obsession that we're getting with modern media with extremely complex recipes and actually cooking as a sort of theatre sport?
Well, I mean, I'm not a particularly great fan of that, and that's... Because it kind of it takes food away from what it is. It becomes competitive, and you know there are programs that shall remain unnamed on television that on one hand are extremely beneficial for increasing the Australian vernacular when it comes to food, but on the same hand, as you said, they also turn it into a theatre sport, something that becomes competitive when food essentially is collaborative. It's sharing, it's nurturing, it's not competitive, it's the total opposite of competition. So by putting it in that realm and environment, it changes what it is. And I also find that by celebrating food in that way, it also alienates the people who need it the most. So the people that don't have access to, say, thermomixers and a big flash kitchen and buying all these exotic ingredients that it takes to make a Heston-inspired dinner party for you and your friends, but the people that actually need to learn to cook to put food on the table for their family, it alienates them. And so instead of them going, I want to engage, I want to learn to cook because this is essential for me and my family, they go, that's just something that foodie knobs do. Not that foodies are knobs, it's just that I'm just putting myself in the perspective of someone else.
What can we look forward to in the new season of River Cottage then? What areas can you explore that you haven't covered before?
Yeah, well, it's one of those things that farming and growing is a lifelong process of refinement of very simple tasks, which is a bit ironic because TV is the total opposite of that. It's kind of like, what next, what next, what next? And we need to cram as much new stuff in an episode as possible. So on one hand, there will be a refinement of my journey as a small farmer. And then on the other hand, I mean, we've only explored such a tiny region of Australia. It's this, you know, we've done 3 seasons, 24 hours of television in 100-kilometre radius. And for a sparsely populated area, that's incredible. You know, it's to find all that talent and all that passion in such a small area. But I don't think that the South Coast is particularly unique for that, that exists all around Australia, whether it be urban or regional or remote bush. So hopefully in the coming season, we'll be able to get out and actually celebrate some regions beyond the South Coast.
Thanks for talking to us today, Paul.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.